Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Big Show. I'm Jeff Gamet. I'm your interim host, sitting in for Ewan Rankin, and I'm so happy to be here today with all of you. And I'm going to be honest with all of you. I've been so busy the past week that even though I know a lot of tech news has been happening, I have no idea what tech news is really happening. So I can't wait to learn all about it in real time with everyone else. So,
So it's a normal Thursday.
It's a normal Thursday.
Sounds pretty much like it, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, there are many Thursdays where at least I have some idea what's been going on. And if I need to throw a story in, I could make that happen quickly. Today, there'd be a lot of ad-libbing while I went to look to find something. So anyhow, I'm so happy to be here with all of you. And I can't wait to see what amazing stories you have all brought today. Speaking of amazing, Ben, how are you?
I am great. It's a very important holiday weekend here, and I'm ready to get going.
Yeah, the first really cold weekend of the season.
Eh, maybe for you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, for us, it's an American holiday. Yeah, we call it cold. I'm sorry, I was going to come up with a really clever, funny name.
Coldtober.
And you nailed it. Thank you.
Coldtober.
Coldtober.
It's right. This weekend is Coldtober in the United States, at least in the Midwest and in Colorado. So bundle up, kids. It's going to get chilly. Yeah.
Especially during trick-or-treating.
Yeah. Yeah. And okay. So for those of you not in the U.S., the whole trick-or-treating thing is this is something that we have all grown up with, and it's a wonderful experience.
You do that here.
Yeah, it's in other places too. But in some places,
not just America. We do that here.
That's true. You do it here. You do it there now. Not on the scale that we do it here yet, but I believe in you.
America, yes. England's but, getting there. We're becoming
but America does everything like to the max. So.
Yeah,
that's true.
We are.
And here, it isn't Halloween until kids get enough candies to actually get diabetes.
Yeah, this is true.
That's true.
Yeah.
The difference is also, like, if you're in the U.S., like, any store you go to, you cannot escape, like, rows and rows and rows of, like, Halloween decorations and candy and everything. Here, you actually have to find... Yeah, in Austria, you actually have to go look for the right stores to even find anything. It's really fun.
I was in a store today, walked in front of me, there was a big stack pile of sweets and various things with skeletons on it, all kinds of other rubbish that no one needs. And that was there, yes. Yes.
I have a friend.
And then you go in the bigger stores, and then there's even more rubbish that you don't need.
Yeah, I have a friend that was who the case went here. To the UK. in the 90s.
Oh yeah, and, we won.
And was there over Halloween. And so the kids, they were staying with some of their friends, and the kids had heard about Halloween. And so my friend was explaining to them what the whole Halloween thing is, and trick-or-treating and costumes. And they were so excited by the idea that they told their mom that they need to have costumes so they can go trick-or-treating. And so my friend helped them make costumes and explain the whole process. And apparently the mom called around to the friends like for a couple blocks around and said, "So we're doing this American thing. This is what it is. And so my kids are going to be showing up at your door and saying trick or treat, and they'll be expecting some candy." And so they had to explain the whole Halloween thing. And a lot of it involved, it's American, with responses like, ah.
Oh, okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
So
weird Americans.
So the neighbors, they all went and got like candy bars and stuff, regular size candy bars, because the little Halloween sizes weren't available. And so these kids.
Oh, I like that even better.
Right. Yeah. Now it's like a valuable holiday. Yeah. So the kids went around to the houses and a couple blocks around their place in their little costumes, and they went trick or treating, and they came home with an amazing haul of candy. And so I like to think that my friend back in the 90s was part of the catalyst for the growth of Halloween in the UK.
It's a lot bigger than it. When I was a child, it wasn't very big, other than there was horror movies on the TV and scary shows in the 90s, really.
Which was just every
more
show.
A thing in the in the noughties, when my kids, my oldest now, was that kind of age. And it was generally you went around a group of friends that you all went to school with, so everyone was doing it, everyone knew what was going on, and it was all fine. And that seemed to still be the case with my two bigger ones, my two younger ones now, was much the same. And now they go out and get drunk and dress up, and that's the difference. But it's much the same, but we have taken it on board much, much bigger than we ever used to here now. Our big event in this time of year was coming up in a week's time or so, which is 5th of November. Fireworks night was, when I was a child, fireworks night was the big thing. And part of that, for random things that people do, you build a guy. So for those of you that are in the UK, this is an effigy. Basically, you stuff newspapers into your dad's old shirt and trousers. You put a head on it, you draw a face on it. You put it in a cart or something, and you walk around the thing and you say penny for the guy. People throw a few pennies in the bottom of the thing. And when you've got enough money, you go and buy your fireworks with the money you collected. That was the idea. And this is celebrating the fact that a guy called Guy Fawkes tried to blow up Parliament.
It's well known.
The
5th of November. Yeah, V for Vendetta.
Yeah, V for Vendetta. He does that, the rhyme of remember the 5th of November, gunpowder, treason, and plot.
Mm-hmm.
Always remember the 5th of November, because it would never be forgotten.
Yeah.
The thing about that, considering that we already pulled a Guy Fawkes a couple hundred years ago. It blew up the British.
Yeah, we don't have a tea day for that or anything like that. Tea and the CD already.
Don't celebrate that one.
But something I think I tell every year is, when I grew up, there was something like Halloween in Germany. Like in the, what was that, early 90s? It wasn't called Halloween, and it actually dates back at least a couple hundred years.
Yeah.
It's called Rübengeister. So the, whatever, like, I don't know how to translate that. It's the pumpkin ghost, basically, or something like that. So yeah, same principle. Like, you would go around, get candy and stuff, and you would carry around like little candles and stuff like that. So,
which is actually where it came to the U.S. from German immigrants.
Mm-hmm, probably. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I said it's not well, like, it's very specific, like southern regions of Germany. It's not everywhere. Like, most regions don't even know about that. But like all the way in the south, that was a thing. And I was living in I think 300 people. Like, that's how big the village was. So everybody knew everybody. And we would go around.
That's trick or treat.
Yeah, and in a similar vein here in the UK, I think you have it over in the States as well, which is called many different things. Devil's Night, I think, over in the US. Mischievous Night, it's known as in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, again, the same time, at 30th of October. And here, again, people will go and throw eggs at people's houses, take their gates off, and all this kind of thing. And
we have
that's
that,
another old tradition.
Yeah, we have that in April, end of April, 30th of April.
When I was in high school, we called that Friday night, Ian.
Okay.
Oh, that's awesome.
Funny.
Sometimes Saturday, too.
Sometimes Saturday.
Sometimes Saturday. Yeah.
Sometimes also Thursday, probably.
So, yeah, Patrice, how do you say trick or treat in German, since it was has German origins?
If I could remember what we said back then,
yeah,
I don't remember, to be honest.
Yeah. Guten Tag, danke.
We have hit new highs for trying not to do a show.
Oh, we don't.
Yeah, let's just keep going.
We can really talk crap for hours if we want. You know we can.
Yep.
True. We can.
All right.
But I feel obligated to at least say, Patrice, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. I wanted to mention, I think I've the only place I've seen that has Halloween decorations is my own. Like, at least none of, like, I mean, maybe I haven't seen everything, but there's maybe someone in Vienna who does it. But the store I bought all the decorations from, they were, I think, like half a month ago, they were doing like 40% off on Halloween decorations. So I think you can imagine how popular stuff is because nobody's buying it.
So,
which was good for me because I wanted some.
Fly over, spend some time with you,
mm-hmm.
buy my Halloween decorations, fly back to the US.
And it's probably still cheaper.
And it's probably still cheaper than Halloween. Yeah. Spirit Halloween. That's something that you don't get to experience outside the US.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for that is a very uniquely American thing, where you have these temporary stores for Halloween. They're full of costumes and decorations, mm-hmm. and just all the stuff you need to have a completely crazy Halloween experience. And what they do is go and rent for a couple months vacant stores.
Mm-hmm.
Like a calendar store.
Kind of a pop-up store.
Yeah.
Like the calendar stores. Just, do you have those in the States? Those ones that turn up, calendar club, that turn up only for a week, that turn up for the month before Christmas.
Yeah, usually those are kiosks in the mall.
Glossy calendars. Yeah, the same idea, mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, yeah, Spirit Halloween. So the joke is when you see a big business go out, the meme will be, you have a photo of the storefront and then the Spirit Halloween sign on it. So most recently, and I'm not doing this to be political, it's just a funny thing. there have been images showing up online of Trump Tower in New York with the Spirit Halloween sign on it.
One thing I wanted to mention, today is the national holiday of Austria. Like the Republic, everything. Oh. So I've seen a lot of tanks and like military with machine guns and like all of that, kind of like the 4th of July in the US. So that was interesting. I think part of the reason is we actually have the second highest, terror warning currently in Austria because of like Israel and all of that. So they were on guard. You saw a lot of police everywhere. Why and a bet. Lot of people. So yeah, but it was fun. I walked around a little bit.
Patrice, so I have an Austria question for you.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a thing online a couple days ago that I haven't actually bothered to research to see if it's real or not. But since
we don't have exploding trees, just saying.
Oh, well then, why go? So I saw this thing that said at the airport, I'm not sure which one,
mm-hmm.
there is a special counter. I guess like a customer service counter.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
And it's for the people that flew to Austria who thought they were flying to Australia.
I've not seen it myself because I have not used. I mean, it's a tiny airport in Salzburg, but it's possible. I mean, Salzburg is a very common. Actually, I don't know why it would be Salzburg and not Vienna, because most people, if they want to fly to Austria, would probably fly to Vienna, or Australia. Right. So I don't know if it's true or not. Maybe it's a joke. I don't know. Maybe someone put up a sign. If I said I can neither confirm nor deny it because I've not seen it.
Well, I love the idea.
Yeah, it's a fun idea.
So much fun. Yeah.
Yeah, it would be a very Austrian thing to do. So, yeah, it's possible.
All I can say is this.
Vienna doesn't have it.
Mate.
Yeah.
About
no,
about
Vienna doesn't have it because I've that I would have seen.
About 40 years ago, Johnny Carson had a guy on his show, and he was famous for having intended to fly from Los Angeles to Oakland, California.
Mm-hmm.
And he got on a flight to Auckland, New Zealand.
Yeah, that oh. It happened.
You think the difference in the price for the ticket would have been a key indicator? Yeah.
Back then, probably not. No, it's kind of sad. Like, even autocorrect on the iPhone, when I start typing Austria, wants me to write Australia. So
Who wants to go? Who wants to go to Austria anyway?
Yeah.
Hey,
me.
Here you go. Yeah,
I do. I don't suppose we're going to trip there yet.
Yeah? Well, as long as we're doing a show of apparently just introductions, Tom, how are you?
I'm doing great, thanks, Jeff. Had a fun weekend. We went to see scary movies at the Stanford Theater in Palo Alto. They show movies. Nice. We saw The Werewolf.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a great movie. I hadn't seen it in a long time. And The Scarlet Claw, a Sherlock Holmes film from the early 40s with
the Basil Rathbone ones.
Basil Rathbone.
Oh,
That was really good. And then on Monday, we took a day trip down to Big Sur, walked around the beach. And Big Sur is a great place. So
it is. I like Big Sur.
Yeah.
It's
not just the operating system.
Yeah, not just the operating system. The IRL version of Big Sur is pretty good too.
Right. Yep. Awesome. All right. So if you went to different like in person Halloween experience where you get the whole venue vibe going along, the Stanley Hotel in Estes Park, which is the hotel that The Shining is based on.
That would scare the hell out of me.
Not going there.
It's a I've stayed in the Stanley before,
did you see two little girls?
And well, apparently the room I was in was haunted, and there was weird stuff happening that we couldn't quite explain, but they do really great events. And
that movie still scares the hell out of me.
But when you walk in the Stanley Hotel, your first thought is, this doesn't look like the Overlook at all, because it looks like the Stanley. But it's a great place. The museum for the hotel, unfortunately, isn't at the hotel anymore. They needed more space. So it's in town now, which is a better location for it. But I think they still sell Red Rum beer at the venue. Yeah.
I have to get there sometime.
Yeah. Well, let me know when you're coming out, and we'll go hang out. They have an incredible whiskey bar at the Stanley.
Just when you're entering the hotel, just whatever you do, not say, here's Johnny, because you'll hear a disembodied, get it.
I'm pretty sure what you'll hear is the staff just groaning, like, oh. Anyhow, Ian, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I've racked up yet another certification. So that was good last week. I was waiting to get the confirmation from you. A CompTIA certified technical trainer.
Nice. Oh, you.
So I had to pass an exam, and I had to record me presenting and delivering a training class that was then uploaded and marked against particular metrics and criteria that they judge it on. And I passed. So that's excellent. So that was last week. And what else have I been up to? The usual things, really. Not too much. Other than they've landed on me a rebrand of the company logo and all of the other stuff. And so therefore, today's mostly been making my slides now look like the new company color scheme and banging my head against the desk.
That's corporate life.
Corporate life. And the other thing with corporate life is, or at least corporate design is, they clearly went to some idiots to tell them what the design language they should use for the slide decks. I've done a lot of courses on presentation skills over the years, and one thing consistent is simple slides, preferably a darkish background, not necessarily black, not white, because white's too bright generally, particularly if you're presenting like we are most of the time. You don't want a big white screen glaring at you. So what colours are they? Black and white are the backgrounds we've got the choice of. And a lot of chuffing green, of course. But
yeah.
No way. And one of my colleagues in my team, he's a specialist in sales presentations, sales technique and everything else. He presents a really great class on how to make your presentations. One of his key sort of people he picks on as this is how you do stuff, is Apple.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in terms of the way they do delivery, said, look at this. When the first iPhone was launched, look at that. That's exactly how you do a presentation. You know, you don't have to make it complicated. It doesn't need lots of stuff going. You know, it's...
Well, Apple is so serious, or has been so serious about the quality of their presentations, that they ended up writing their own application for the slideshow elements. Yeah, oh, right, that's where Keynote came from. They were using it internally, and then eventually turned it into a commercial product.
I never use. I've got somewhere on this machine. But yes, it's the... So yeah, that's the most frustrating. But he cites them, and of course, I didn't talk to him at all. I said, the doctor recommended it. No. So there'll be endless moaning next time I meet up with him. I can see it coming. But never mind. It all is good.
Well, it's taken us only 20 minutes, but I think we can talk about some news.
Yeah.
And the amazing thing is, it's taken us so long to get to this point. Everyone's story is already in here. All I have to do is start clicking. Ben, tell us about your story.
Okay. I have actually come up with a story that is both British and American.
Wow.
Okay.
Impossible.
Yes, everybody has heard of a little green company called BP.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They are pretty much the number one gas station in both the US and the UK because, well, BP bought Amoco.
I thought you would say they're the number one polluter in the world.
That too. They're awesome. Overachievers. Yep. Well... we've talked about several times in the last couple months about the pretty much imminent change from CCS1, which is not related to the European CCS2, by the way, but to Tesla's NACS connector.
So this is the car charger connector, the thing you plug into your EV to juice it up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well,
I knew Tesla that. I was straight for you.
Yeah, Tesla has made its first major sale in what could end up being its largest business of all. BP will be buying $100 million worth of Tesla-made superchargers for their own network.
Their only business, by the way. So I think that at some point it's going to be the only business Tesla has.
Yeah, probably. But these will go into BP-owned BP, Amoco, and Travel Center of America locations. Considering that this is essentially the largest gasoline company in America, this is going to be a pretty huge buy. And I think this kind of shows the tipping point where BP has, it has so little, my brain doesn't work today.
It's because of Halloween, Ben, all of the candy.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
It's placing more of a bet on the future of EV than it is in its petroleum, which is literally in its name.
I mean, at this point, this is, I'm not sure this is a big bet.
No, not at all.
Like, it's like, I mean, if they'd done that 15 years ago, maybe at this point,
But
everybody's doing it.
But like I said, I think this is going to end up being a absolutely gigantic business for Tesla.
Mm-hmm.
Making superchargers for other people's networks. Since
I do
have to hand it to them. They make the best chargers.
Yep. Yeah, it's the one thing they do really well. Charging networks. I mean, most of their chargers these days are like, I would say almost carbon neutral. They're independent, most of them. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of them have like solar panels and everything, and they produce at least most of the, from what I, at least what Tesla is saying publicly, most of the power. It's quite nice.
Most of the ones, the chargers we see around here don't have solar. A few have solar. One of the things they do around here is in elementary and high school parking lots, they put a structure on top of the parking lot, install solar panels, and then put chargers underneath.
When I say they have solar, it's not always at the charger. But Tesla is building, building out solar farms. Other places and solar farms and then doing it that way.
Yeah, Tesla is as much an energy company as it is a car manufacturer. In fact, at this point, being an energy company, it pretty much is a precursor to making EVs.
So how long before British Petroleum rebrands as British Power?
Not that long, I bet.
Well, I mean, technically, they already rebranded a number of years ago as Beyond Petroleum.
Oh, they did?
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
Well, that's why that big impulse, isn't it? I mean, that's the same.
Beyond Burger. But I have to say, power replacing petroleum, I wouldn't be surprised if that were to happen.
That's funny.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you see that happening more and more. A lot of the like big old oil, like the gas companies, all the like everything that was associated with it, they're step by step selling it or separating it into a separate company and kind of trying to get rid of it.
They're trying to stay relevant some way in the world, which is going away from fossil fuels, isn't it? They've got to find some way to stay relevant.
It's not about relevancy. It's about business. I mean, they want to stay in business.
And make money,
Keep making money in one way or another. I mean, and since very clearly the whole hydrogen thing, which, I mean, like anybody who knows anything about it is saying, well, except for the people who are paid by those companies. But anybody like independent, they're all saying, that's just like basically the same business model. They wanted to keep the business model and was like, oh yeah, we can just sell hydrogen. It's kind of like gas, so it works the same way. So yes, we should do that technology.
Yeah.
But it was very clearly it's not the solution. I think most are now realizing, there is probably a business for hydrogen, but it's not going to be as big as they thought. I mean, let's move to the technology that is working.
One technology that is coming along is synthetic fuels. I was talking to a guy the other. I was talking to a guy the other day who works in the meter. Basically, he's a chemist and he works in kind of like the metering and the kind of the engineering behind getting fuel from a big tank into petrol pumps and stuff.
Yeah,
and he was saying that he was saying that diesel will remain relevant because he'll go to be biogenerated synthetic products that are built from elsewhere rather than being fossil fuel based. That's what he thinks. That's what he's seeing a lot of at the moment. Whether it is or not, I don't know.
There is for sure a lot of money being invested in it, and there is, I think, also a market for it, but I don't think it's going to be as big of a market. It's the same thing. Like, it's the old business model. Hey, can we keep... Like, in the EU, they fought about that. Like, they wanted to say no like no gas powered cars at all from I think 2035 or 40 or something onwards. And then in the end they were like, yeah, but if like those like biofuels, whatever synthetic fuels, if you use that, then it's fine. So that was kind of basically that's politics. Same thing as always.
Yeah.
But like there is areas where it's gonna be harder, at least in the short to midterm, to replace fuel or gas or kerosene in this case for planes.
Yeah, I'm gonna say I'm thinking that avgas is a difficult one to
That's probably the market for it currently. But I think everything else will it's just the technology that we have and the way it's getting better and better. It's just so much better compared to all the disadvantages. Like you keep the disadvantages of basically a fuel-based system if you go to synthetic fuels. So there won't be a market. I mean, for older cars, for like, you know, there won't be a market. It's just not going to be the big market that everybody thinks.
Well, there's always going to be multiple sources of energy. Yeah. We have it today. I think what you say is probably right. The solar generated, wind generated electricity looks like a much better path. But you know, maybe biodiesel will stick around. Even fossil fuels will stick around in a few small cases, hopefully.
For sure.
But
there will be a lot of cases.
You know, if I was on the board of BP or any big petroleum company, I'd be doing exactly the same thing. They should be just all over. They have tons of capital because they make so damn much money. You know, to build out the charger network and take 2% of every charge. That might be a nice little business, you know.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. I saw like a video recently from the UK. There is, I think, a Danish company who used to be like a big like gas, oil, whatever company.
Shell?
No, it wasn't Shell. It was some other, and now they're doing like offshore wind and everything in the UK.
Right.
And Denmark and like
yeah, we've got some really good.
They got rid of their got rid of their entire oil based business completely. They were like, okay, we're switching. Mm-hmm. Like this is dead. We're going somewhere else, and they shifted everything over from coal and honestly, gas and everything.
Who has more capital? I mean, besides government, who has more capital to invest in something like charger networks and oil companies?
Yeah. Oil companies.
And the thing is also we need to invest in that.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen on its own. This is exactly what we need. There's potential, there's money to be made, and people need to invest in it.
Yeah, it makes sense that on your every fuel station you go to, fuel is everything. It's electricity as well as fossil fuels. And the one thing that the idol of the electric car, as exciting and interesting as it is, seems to fall through the gaps when you start looking down into personal mobility. And the problem of the poverty trap now that exists. If you say we're going to outlaw petrol cars, there's a whole host of people. I mean, I know I'm talking to friends recently about the used car market has gone mad, and what you used to be able to buy for a cheap car is nowhere near anymore.
Yeah, so but that has nothing to do with EVs.
Maintaining and keeping older cars now, so we can't get rid of them because people can't afford to get rid of them, that they are continuing to maintain an older vehicle. So although we're not creating any new fossil fuels and new pollutant by assembling another car, we do have to maintain and manufacture the parts. We still have to provide the fuel in order for it to go somewhere. And
at least for the foreseeable future. That's why I'm saying like there is a market. Yeah. And I mean the car collectors and all of those people, they will still be around. I mean, and they will still need fuel. So there's definitely a market for it. I mean, it's going to take quite a long time to get rid of those like second, third hand market.
Yeah.
But eventually it's going to happen because it happens from the top.
Yeah. And like
as cars, go ahead, man.
Yeah. There's also going to be another large market for fuel. Why it's pretty clear that the internal combustion engine will be going away as a prime mover. It's probably going to stick around for quite a while as a energy distribution source to recharge the onboard batteries in long haul situations.
I'm not so sure about that.
I mean, have tractors and stuff farming? Is farming yet moving to electric tractors, or is that remaining diesel?
They are. Tractors, you see a lot of trucks. You see especially the short-haul deliveries. Like in Vienna, IKEA, that was really funny. IKEA, I got two deliveries. They're fully electric. They have, and they don't have like little tiny vans where you think, oh, like, no, it's like a normal sized truck that they're driving around Vienna. I mean, sure, it's short distance. Like the IKEA is whatever, 5-10 miles away. It's not that far, and they're driving all around the city, so it's short distance for sure. But they have a full truck. Looks no different than a normal, like normal local, like smaller sized truck that would do delivery of furniture.
That's what local Amazon is doing here.
Rivian, right?
Bus services in the UK, a lot of those are all going electric. Yeah.
And that's
here was delivering a lot with electric. Yeah. I think it's DHL, one of them.
DHL, I think all of them are. And there's another trend that I really like, and that's micromobility. We're seeing way, like it used to be that, you needed a big van and then you had to have big routes because the big van had to kind of make sense from a business perspective. So I needed a lot of deliveries. And electric has changed that a lot. And a lot of times now, what happens is the stuff gets delivered to like a hub of some sort, and then bikes, electric bikes and like little trikes and like small vehicles will deliver it the last mile basically to the places where they need to go, which is anyway easier because they're smaller. They can like go through the denser urban areas. Like sure, it's different on like whatever in the middle of Midwest US somewhere because the distance is not different, but like in cities, that's happening a lot. Like I see, like here I don't see any like that's not true. I do still see some delivery vans, but I see a lot more like cargo bikes and stuff like that for deliveries.
That's very cool.
I mean, Vienna is very bike friendly, so I think that helps, but it's not just in Vienna. I've seen it in Stockholm. I've seen it in Berlin and even in like Portugal, you see that. And like Lisbon has a lot of hills and everything, but still happening. Because it's simply more efficient. We're figuring out it is cheaper and more efficient to do that, and that's driving that.
All right, so we still have more stories we need to hit. Yes. So even though I would love to just keep talking about this because I have so many opinions, but that means info for future shows. So instead, Ian, tell us about your story.
My story is one that I've mentioned before, and it was heading towards law. And now it's arrived, is the Online Safety Act in the UK, which is another one of these kind of hopeful bits of pretend legislation. They've hoped that they're going to try and protect the world, but honestly. And so it's now passed through all of our governing bodies and all of our approval systems now, and it's ready to become law. And it's lost all its teeth for what it was claimed to want to try and achieve, because one of the things they were trying to do is to have keys to be able to monitor things like encrypted traffic on messenger services. No, that's not happened. And people like Meta and Signal and all that have told them, well, no, just we won't have our service in the UK. If that's the case, fair enough. See you later. Mm-hmm. WhatsApp won't come. Meta will take WhatsApp away. Yeah, no problem. And they've kind of go, oh, maybe we'll find a way around it. Let's talk about it kind of thing. And it still hasn't successfully gone one way or another. I've still got WhatsApp and all the other kind of communication mechanisms. So, and the other thing they were trying to help with is the kind of thing where they want to protect us against cyberbullying, which is a good thing. They want to protect us against various sort of viral, you know, like eating Tide and all those other kind of things that went around the internet a while ago, trying to keep illegal material and illegal trading off the internet. Whether they'll succeed, I have no idea. It's all going to be administered by the UK's regulator, which is known as Ofcom. I mean, they do a fair job of some amount of DNS censorship to keep things like Pirate Bay and stuff out of the UK, but I'm not sure how much more they'll achieve with some of this and what they'll be able to achieve here. So, and anyone with a VPN can get around it anyway. So let's see what happens. I just couldn't go with another AI story this week. So I thought this one was interesting just because he's actually made its way through. I just don't know whether it's going to have any value.
It has symbolic value, but it may not have the value that the bill or the law creators intended.
Yeah. Security theater.
It is. And when you start crafting laws that regulate communication and related areas, and the core of your argument is, but think about the children. Mm-hmm. Granted, we do need to protect children. Absolutely. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. However, I agree 100%.
When you're presenting an argument as, but think about the children, there's a very high likelihood that your argument is presenting something that is actually not going to be favorable or useful for the people, but instead is going to be either ineffective completely or something that provides a value to the government through surveillance or some other form of control.
There's this meme I've seen where like there's it's basically like a gift wrapping station. And the guy's asking, so like, how do like they have some new law and they're like, or some new thing, like a box of some sort. And they're like, how would you like to have me wrap it? And there is two options. It's like, think of the children or fight against terrorism. Like, those are the two options.
Oh my God, yes.
Yeah, that's how it works. Yeah,
I think you guys said it. It sounds more like a bill that states intent and their hopes and desires, but mm-hmm. will have no benefit in achieving that. Nobody's figured this out. And there's no bill that can be written by any legislative body that's going to fix it.
Yeah. And when you look, there are a few privacy sort of worries as well for us in terms of if platforms comply and remove encryption or allow key access, so security services can monitor the services.
Then there is no security at that point.
At that point, we have government monitoring of our communications, and
yeah, the platform,
a lot of us are
dead.
Concerned about that as a privacy, as an invasion of our privacy, and I completely agree it is. And then you've got on the other hand, but the children, and the other sort of thing around this, and you saw a similar thing when Meta was in, or Facebook and Zuckerberg were in up in front of Senate. Recently, you've got laws about technology being tried to explain to old people that all of them, the information they're being given about why this is good is going over their heads, apart from the key things, we must protect the children. And all this internet's dangerous because that's all they hear. And so it passes through fairly easily because why wouldn't you? But without any knowledge or thought of how this will actually be implemented or work, or.
But that's true for almost every law, right? I mean, it's
absolutely.
Unfortunately, most of the time, the people passing it have no clue how it's going
to
work.
Well, but to be fair, I mean, I don't disagree. But to be fair to politicians, that's why they have huge staffs. You know, yeah. I'm sure the senator from Montana has a staff member that can explain how encryption works. But I think
you would hope so. Yes,
I would think so. I think half the time that people are supporting bills like this, it's just a promotional, it's a PR thing. They know it's not going to work.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to keep us moving. And I have a great segue here.
Keep rolling.
Speaking of things that aren't working, Patrice, tell us about your story.
Well, I mean, yeah, they're not working because Microsoft stopped working on them many years ago. But it's really interesting. So Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella actually admitted that giving up on Windows Phone, like what was that, like 6, 7 years ago? Or maybe close to 10 now? I don't know. But a long time ago. It's been a while. That it was probably a mistake. I mean, back then they had like they tried, and then they acquired Nokia, and then they tried again, and then kind of did a tax write-off thing and stopped working on it, and switched to Android, and kind of didn't do anything with that either. So yeah, he's basically saying, well, if I think we could have figured out a way to make it work, to deliver something to the market, I think the market would have been there for us, and we kind of didn't. So the question is now for me, what is he going to do about it? I mean, he is absolutely in a position to say, well, maybe we should try again. Mm-hmm. Or do you think it's too late now?
I agree with you. I think there's room for more operating systems in the smartphone space.
Yeah.
I think for Microsoft at this point in the game, it's probably not worth the investment to get back in to that. Mm-hmm. However, Microsoft was doing some really interesting things with Windows Phone.
It wasn't a bad operating system.
Yeah, it was really, really good.
Yeah.
I had one of the early ones. I had one of the early Samsung ones, but it was excellent.
Yeah, I remember like Ewan and Muller and some other people on the BTM side raving about it. Like they had Windows phones, and they were very happy. I mean, I don't remember who it was, but we had one person like holding on to their Windows phone like till the very last second.
Yeah, I think Batwench was one of the people that held on to her phone.
And a friend of mine equally would still like to keep his Windows phone. He said for years it was the best OS ever and the best simple phone that sort of did all he needed it to do. And it had a corking camera. Because some of those models, didn't they? They came with a really good camera.
At that point, one of the best cameras in smartphones in the market. Yeah. I mean, way better than iPhone.
And both the OS and the phones had their own design language, unlike anything else.
Yeah, they didn't just copy Apple.
Yeah, to be perfectly honest, around the time of iOS 7, iOS 8, or before that, honestly, if Microsoft wouldn't have dropped Windows Phone, if I was going to move away from iOS, it probably would have been to Windows Phone instead of Android.
Yeah, the big issue Microsoft had back then was developers. Yeah. They didn't have a ecosystem. Well, they had an ecosystem on the Windows side, but it didn't have a mobile ecosystem at all. They didn't have anything. They didn't have even a clear message for developers how they should be developing apps and stuff. Yeah. So it was kind of a mess on that side, and a lot of developers just gave up on it. We're like, even the big ones that could totally afford it were like, Microsoft tried paying people to build apps, and they just didn't because they were like,
If you have a phone platform that doesn't have key apps, I mean, imagine a phone that doesn't support TikTok. Forget it. You're dead.
Yeah, forget that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yep. So, and I think that's the struggle they would have today, but it's not impossible to get there.
Yeah.
Even today, there is a possibility to still get to that market.
Yeah,
especially if they leverage their Xbox division.
Yeah, I mean they have a huge developer base and user base from the Windows side. They have also a huge developer and user base from the Xbox side. I mean, if anybody can make it work, I think it's Microsoft.
Yeah, and they've got the money to do it.
And I think
the money and the technical chops.
Yeah, and I think for the company's future, developing a mobile operating system is in both their hardware and software interests.
Yeah, I mean, for me, still the question is it too late?
Well, the thing was, they originally built it into the cores. It's the the whole thing when they originally released those the last kind of gasp of the Windows Phone, it was the whole continuum idea, the idea that you could be writing a document on the train on your phone as you're headed into work, plug the device into your desk, and then continue working on a Windows 11 Windows 8 type platform, you know, and carry on. Yeah. And that was and that continuity, if they'd have kept that, that could have had, I think if they do it now, one thing they have to do is to kind of go, okay, we need TikTok, Facebook, Snapchat, WhatsApp. There's a core set of apps. I don't know what they'll be, which ones they'll be. We have to, do, I mean, if it means we pay money to the property owners to get them in our app store, we have to start the system off with all this stuff in. I mean, to me, my mind says that the way you do it is you build a shell on top of Android, because then you can use the Google Play Store and you've got no infrastructure to build. So your cost of entry is easier. Do like Samsung do and build your own top front end for the Android base, or Amazon do. Yeah.
But I honestly don't think that's devices. I mean, they tried that. That was their last ditch effort with Nokia. I don't think that works, because that market, I mean, what's your differentiation? Like, what is different about what you do versus what Samsung does? Well, not a lot. If you're building on Android, there's not a lot that you can do.
Well, and you also have to think about the customers. You know, we're all customers of phones that may have iOS or Android. What would it take for you to move to a Windows phone? And it's probably more than a slightly better camera or whatever else. Yep. You know, we've sort of seen the differentiation in hardware kind of flatten out, right? There isn't so much differentiation anymore.
Yes.
But, if I'm a business user that has to use Windows at work all day long, there may be a compelling reason to have a Windows phone as well.
Yeah.
But I think the other part of the problem for Microsoft is now there's a lot more Mac OS in business than there was 10 years ago. But there's still a majority Windows.
For most
big enterprises.
For me to move over to a Windows phone, number one, I would have to have the same ecosystem closeness there is within Apple platforms. And I think that's where Microsoft would be able to move forward. The technology was just not available 10 years ago to go forth with their vision. It exists today. Which, by the way, might actually lead to our next story, I think, Jeff.
You know, I love it when I can just send those vibes out and Ben just picks it up and runs with it like that. So thank you. Yes. Tom, speaking of technologies and ecosystems, tell us about your story.
Windows platforms. Okay. My story is about, I guess, announcements and confirmed rumors that both AMD and NVIDIA are considering or are designing ARM-based processors to run Windows on. So we know that, I think we talked about it last week, that Qualcomm produces an ARM-based processor that you can run Windows on, and it's kind of crap. Nobody uses it. But the thing I didn't realize was Qualcomm had an exclusive deal with Microsoft to produce processors for Windows to run this version of Windows. They signed that in 2016, and guess what? That expires next year. So starting next year, other companies will have the right to do such things, I guess, if they come to an agreement with Microsoft. So it sounds like NVIDIA may or may not be designing chips internally to run Windows on ARM. And I mean, it's a little bit hard to separate rumor from announcements and intent, but it kind of makes sense.
I mean, Microsoft is working very closely with NVIDIA on the AI side. So Certainly. That makes sense.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, I, you know, NVIDIA is a huge part of the market, and AMD are both huge parts of the ecosystem. And it's kind of like what we were discussing, RISC-V versus ARM, and customers always like to have two sources and a little bit of competition. Mm-hmm. I think Microsoft is concerned about Intel and always has been. They have AMD as backup. That's been great, you know, for the last 10 years or so. AMD has been a competent replacement for Intel for the Windows PC. But if the ARM-based thing takes off, you know, I think they want their choice. Qualcomm, AMD, NVIDIA. Who knows? Maybe even Intel will join that.
You know, I mean, this looks like it. And I think Microsoft has learned a little bit also from the 90s, really, where, I mean, infamous Intel almost monopoly. They were stuck with Intel. I mean, a lot of companies were stuck with Intel. There was barely anybody on the market. I mean, there was still AMD, but it back then wasn't a big competitor to Intel.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and AMD stumbled there for a few years, where for 5 or 6 years they were not really a viable supplier. I think for me the question is, what is the point of Windows on ARM? If you have Windows on Intel or Windows on AMD and it works okay, what's the point of Windows on ARM? What's the
efficiency?
Yeah,
that's the thing. The thing that Intel cannot deliver is the efficiency and the performance of ARM, or of ARM CPUs, as we're seeing with Apple and Qualcomm now.
So then the question becomes, how much of that inefficiency? And I know from a hardware point of view, those processors are not built for low power. That's not the way they were architected. Mm-hmm. But I wonder how much of the problem is Windows.
Not very little of it.
Yeah. It is a problem, but not a lot.
Yeah. Coming from a Intel Mac to an Apple Silicon ARM Mac, the Intel machines used a lot of power, were very noisy, blah, 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 blah. This thing runs circles around any Intel Mac I've ever had.
Sure.
And I never hear the fans.
Yeah.
I have insane battery life. And quite frankly, I think as at least a mobile platform, x86 has hit the end of its road.
Yeah, I think so too. And I mean, I've had developers switch from like Windows to Linux on the same hardware. Mm-hmm. And yes, it was faster. It like was significantly faster. Part of it was that it didn't have to run an antivirus software back then, so that makes a difference. But part of it was Windows, like, for sure. But that doesn't change the underlying characteristics of the hardware, like how much power it is drawing versus how much like power it is delivering at the end, like the CPU power, and that hasn't changed.
Intel is notorious for not paying enough attention to power consumption.
Yeah.
And I think part of the problem is they never listened. Intel didn't listen to anybody. They didn't listen to Apple. They didn't listen to Microsoft.
They still don't listen. I think they like recently released another CPU and were like, oh, it's the fastest CPU. It beats Apple. And it's like, yeah.
Nobody cares.
At like 500 watts of power consumption. Yeah. Like, I mean, sure. I can combine whatever 15 Apple CPUs and use that and have the same power consumption. And then you don't beat that at all. So that's not the point.
Yeah. I don't know enough about CPU architectures anymore to know if there's something that Intel could do with x86. No. You know, I know from, you know, the early 90s, I worked on CPUs when I was working on a 286 compatible CPU back then. And, you know, that was kind of right at the change when, you know, ARM was starting to get popular and RISC was starting to get popular. And the architecture of the hardware changed quite a bit. It's not like the Intel chip architecture today is the same as it was for, you know, Pentium.
No,
it's very different. Yeah. And I wonder if they do have the ability, you know, they have all the data paths and everything else to essentially create a sort of a RISC version of x86 that would run at low power. But the problem is ARM is, or even RISC-V is just so far ahead of them.
I mean, that doesn't mean it can't change. I mean, yes, Intel was ahead of them, like, it changes all the time. So I think that's not the problem. They could change. They could figure out a way. I mean, who knows? They already invent a new something that gives them the edge again. Like that's simply the game.
They could, but honestly, through Apple Silicon, high performance ARM V8 and V9 processors is something that is proven. It's been proven enough where Qualcomm basically got some ex-Apple guys to run when they bought Nuvia. Now AMD and NVIDIA are itching to get in pretty much just as soon as that exclusivity agreement comes. Honestly, I think Intel is going to be, as soon as 2025, is going to be left holding the bag.
Yeah, they're under a lot of stress right now. Yeah. I don't think they even have the ability to put together a team to come up with a new processor. I think that's why they're, even Intel is working more closely with RISC-V and ARM than they used to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean,
anyway, I guess it's good. As consumers, it's a good thing. You know, we may have a new option, which is Windows on ARM made by, you know, really high quality CPU, you know, companies. You know, it's always good to have more options.
Yeah,
exactly. And one other interesting point about this exclusivity agreement, why Qualcomm has had to put out functioning processors, AMD and NVIDIA have had years to just fumble around on R&D. So they could come out with something very, very compelling right out of the gate.
Yeah, NVIDIA's been doing ARM-based designs for long time.
Yeah, they have the hoppers.
You know what else is really compelling?
TSO host.
TSO host. That's right. What makes them so compelling is that they are awesome at web hosting and all the related services that go with that. They're reliable, stable, and easy to work with. And what they're doing is taking what they do best and helping us out. They're giving the British Tech Network the hosting space we need so that there's a place for the website. They're giving us the streaming bandwidth we need so we can live stream shows to you every single week. They're giving us the server space we need so that there's a place for all the show files to live as well. The resources to do all of these things, that's a pretty steep package right there that we would not be able to make happen just on our own. Yet TSO host, they were like, hey, yeah, we like that you're part of the community. We want to get back some to that community. How about we help you out? And so we really, really appreciate that TSO host is here helping us out. So thank you for that, TSO host. Now, what you can do to show your appreciation, and please go do this, go hop on your favorite social media network and thank TSO host for being here and supporting us. Super easy to do. And letting them know that we all do appreciate what they're doing for us, that's really important because it's, well, I mean, it's good karma, but it's also good business because then it lets them know that what they're doing out of generosity is also bringing value to them. So please go give them some online love. And if by chance you need to buy a domain name or you need some web hosting, why not check them out? Because we already know that what they do really well. So here's what you can do. Add your domain name to your cart, add your hosting package to your cart, and then add the discount code BTN20, and you'll get 20% off your order. Super generous. So thank you, TSO host, for being here and supporting us. And speaking of support, Patrice, can you please help me out and tell people where they can find the live chat?
Of course. So we have a really, really, really cool live chat. Where we put all the links, we put today even a couple of extra links to stuff. So if you want to know about, like, what did we have here? Like, we had a comedy bit of a friend of Tom's. I put in an article in German about the Rübengeister. So that's that beat ghosts, whatever we talked about in the beginning.
Thanks for pronouncing that.
You asked for it, so I wanted to put that in here. We got some photos for electric trucks and stuff in the chat, so we have some really cool stuff in there, and you can talk to us like while we're recording the show. So that's also a big benefit of a live chat. All you need to do for that is you head over to chat.britishtechnetwork.com when we are recording, which happens every Thursday, 7 p.m. UK time, for the big show. And be careful, the UK is changing, or actually Europe is changing now to back from summertime to standard time. So time changes are happening this weekend. The US is changing the weekend after. So there's going to be a week of complete mayhem, as always, as every twice a year we have that problem. So make sure for next week's show that you pick the correct time. Use an app for that. Like, there's websites, there's app. Just put in whatever. What's next week gonna be? It's the 2nd of November, I think.
The 2nd of November, yeah. Yes.
So 2nd of November, 7 p.m. UK time, UK local time, so that's gonna be GMT in this case. And then whatever your time is, if that is, join us there and like join our awesome live chat. By the way, also Friday, this week and next week, for the Mac show, if you want to talk about the Apple side of things, that is 4 p.m. UK time. And there is something happening next week, Apple-wise. So there's going to be a keynote poker, and there's going to be a winner of the keynote poker next week. So we'll see what happens.
I cannot wait to see how poorly I perform in keynote poker.
Yeah, we will all perform very poorly, as always. But let's say you are you're like, I would really like to join the live chat, but I can't. I'm working. I'm sleeping. I'm just too busy. I just prefer not doing that. Totally okay. We do have a transcript of that chat, so you can get to all the links, also for the cool things that are now coming up. All you have to do for that is you head over to britishtechnetwork.com/chat. And then there's a little calendar that pops up on the website. And you put in the recording date that you want to see the transcript for, which for today's show would be the 26th of October, 2023. And if you put that in, you will see everything that we talked about.
Awesome. Patrice, thank you for doing that. You are a true professional.
Well, maybe in 10 years I will be.
All right, so you're more professional than I am. How about that?
Okay, I'll take that.
Okay. All right, so now it's time for some cool things. And Ben, it looks like yours is up first. So tell us about yours, please.
Okay, since it is the show before Halloween, I'm getting into a little bit of horror. There is a video game franchise called Five Nights at Freddy's. For anybody is familiar with the American chain Chuck E. Cheese's.
Mm-hmm.
Just imagine that, but the animatronic robots have been haunted by murdered children and are now killing people. Well,
crap. That's seriously the premise of the game.
Yeah. Well, it's not just a game anymore. Blumhouse Productions, who is known for making horror movies, have worked with Five Nights at Freddy's creator, Scott Cawthon, or I forget how. I don't know how to pronounce his last name, but they have brought the video game vision to the big screen. It is already out in UK theaters as of yesterday and will be coming to US theaters and Peacock tomorrow. essentially the main character is a down on his luck guy who accepts a security job position at Freddy Fazbear's Pizzeria, which, like I said, is heavily based on Chuck E. Cheese's, and learns that not everything is how it appears. Pretty much, wow. He has to save himself and his sister, and it looks like a lot of fun for either anybody who has played the video games or not played the video games, and is kind of just interested in the premise.
Okay, Five Nights at Freddy's. All right, I'll check it out. And I'll report back and let you know how I like it. All right, so next up, hold on, everyone started throwing links in here.
Even literal links.
Yes. Okay, Tom, you're next, it looks like.
I am next, and I'm not going to subject anybody to Chuck E. Cheese. I don't think any time I went into Chuck E. Cheese, it didn't look as it appeared to be. And I think Chuck E. Cheese was one of the craziest places I ever went into.
Yes.
Of course, I wasn't a kid, so maybe that was the problem. Anyway, my pick is called a game called Trust and Safety Tycoon. So you might, and it's from Mike Masnek and his crew from Tech Dirt. You might remember a few months ago, they released something called Moderator Mayhem. And I think I picked it on the show.
Oh, yeah.
I remember that.
Basically simulates being a moderator on a social platform. Well, this is now simulates being a member of a trust and safety team on a social media company. And it's pretty good. It's like it's as good as Moderator Mayhem. So it's about a fictitious company named Yapper, which is a social media company. And you're hired as one of the early members of the trust and safety team. At the beginning, you get to weigh in on the company decisions, like the basic operating principles that are going to drive the company. And as you work through this, events come up, you know, somebody posts something, should you take it down, you know, that kind of thing. And you have to make decisions. And as you're working through it, there's a couple meters on there which measure sort of engagement and happiness kind of things about your social media network. And you have to make decisions about, you know, do you take down a video that violates DMCA? If you do, it'll anger users, but the owners of the IP rights, you know, you have to weigh the two. Should you allow fake names or require real names? You know, the more that you ban, it increases the bandwidth on your trust and safety team, so you can't go crazy with that. So it's kind of a fun thing to do.
I'm looking at it right now, and I have to choose the company ethos.
Right.
Do I want the ethos to be spread happiness, tech for humanity, save the world, maximize knowledge, or connect humanity? And yeah.
So I think this fits really well with Ben's pick, because this is kind of a horror situation, right, as well. So.
Yeah, it's my assumption is there's no way for this game to end well, right, no matter what choices you make. That's awesome. I like the art in this too.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm going to soon see how my social media company fails. All right. Ian, I believe you are next.
I am indeed, and I am really sorry. I may cost some people on this call some money. Humble Bundle have been around for ages. They are a fantastic charity organization that managed to get all sorts of interesting stuff on bundles. This time, because we're getting up to the 60th anniversary of Doctor Who, they've got a Doctor Who bundle. So there's a ton of audiobooks, there's a ton of comics, There's a ton of, I'm presuming, PDF books and stuff like that by the looks of things. And it's all yours for 20 quid. Wow. And it's all really good. There's a very simple bundle. You can take the whole shebang. So there's all manner of stuff for things like Aliens and Doctor Who. There's a load of audio dramas that have got there's a unit audio drama. There's an audio drama there with Sylvester McCoy in. There's ones where the current Doctor's in, the more recent Doctor's in. There's loads of good stuff about the early Doctors. So, yes. I recommend that if you'd like.
$25.
Doctor Who role-playing game rulebook.
Yes. That's about the only thing I'm not over-interested in, but everything else looks fun.
Wait. When did the Doctor ever get rules?
Well, he makes his own rules, so...
Yeah.
Okay, and the charity, that's fair. He makes his own
rules. And the charity is an excellent one. I don't know what the US charity's coming up as, but in the UK, it's taking me to BBC's Children in Need, which is a really good children's charity.
Yeah, I'm seeing that too.
Oh, good.
In the US, it looks like it's the BBC Children in Need.
Good. That's a good charity.
Very good. Mm-hmm.
Recommend. I'm going to buy it when I'm finished talking to you a lot. I think, A, because it's supporting children, and A, B, because I'll probably read half of that at least. So, yeah, it'd be fun to have a look through some of the older stuff with.
Right. And it's all DRM-free, which is all awesome.
DRM-free, nice. And it's all and it's all official material as well.
Nice.
Awesome. All right.
I said, sorry, I've got some paper money.
Okay. Patrice, I think that means it's you next.
I think it's me, yeah. So mine is an app that I think a lot of people have heard of. It's Duolingo. So I'm currently learning Portuguese. So I can say a couple of things in Portuguese already. It's like 30 days I think I've done now. And it's like I was critical. Like I tried a couple of different ways. I was critical of Duolingo because it's very cutesy and they don't always explain things well. They kind of throw you in the deep end and just ask you a question and you have to guess what the answer is. But it's actually working really well. I'm actually the combination of like the way they're doing it with like sometimes it's audio you have to listen to and then pick the words to basically say what they said in English or usually in English, sometimes also in Portuguese. Sometimes you have to say it. Sometimes it's text that you have to translate. So they're combining different ways of asking the same thing, basically. And they're doing it in a really nice way. There's always, like, it's fun to use it. There's leaks where you can go up and down. So you're getting a little bit motivated of like, oh, but I don't want to get demoted. Like, I want to get promoted to the next level up. And you get experience points. And there's, like, specials if you do it, like, at night and so on. The free version is, I used the free version until I think 2 or 3 days ago because it was, I tried it. I was simply, I'll use the free version. Like you can only make, I think 5 mistakes and then you have to wait a day until your hearts refill. Basically, you have to watch ads all the time, which is annoying. But it wasn't so annoying that I was like, oh, I can't deal with that. It was okay. So I tried it for like 25 days probably on the free version. And then I decided, okay, it's like, it's not that much per month. I think I paid, or I'm going to pay, I have the 2-week trial now and I'm going to pay like 80 bucks for the year, basically. So not that much. You can even pay for multiple years. Yeah. You can pay month to month if you want. You can learn different languages. Like they have a lot of options. So yeah, I'll probably combine it with, we have Udemy Business at work. So I'll probably combine it with that, just to get also different speakers in. And so they're really good. They have different speakers. So the pronunciation changes between the speakers. So sometimes you have to listen again and it's like, oh, that's the same word I already heard, but slightly differently pronounced. Because that's what humans do. Like, not everybody speaks the same way. So it's really, especially with Portuguese, where there's Brazil is quite big, and there's Portugal. And So it's, as I said, it's yeah. working surprisingly well how it's structured for at least for Portuguese. For me, I'm doing Portuguese English, so
I'm on my 400-day streak on Duolingo at the moment.
Wow. Okay,
I've been that's a pretty user good. For some time. My daughter started me off, and my wife as well, both are avid Duolingo users, and I've been learning German, French. I started out trying to learn a couple of other languages.
I thought you said you're learning English.
some of my European colleagues would like me to learn English. They said. But yeah, no, I started trying to learn Romanian. Romanian was very difficult.
Oh, wow.
Because not because of language being difficult, but just because they speak
the
much faster naturally. And yeah. Arabic, I wanted to do because I do speak to a lot of people in the Middle East. I'd like basically greetings and simple pleasantries. Mm-hmm. What I discovered was, unfortunately, it's really random. It really, it's just useless because it wouldn't give me a set of words that I could form into a useful sentence of.
Yeah, that's how it starts out. Like, I mean, I can tell you no good afternoon stuff. Sometimes it's really strange the things they teach you.
Yeah,
but they do it.
If you're from Romania, and then we got good night. I mean, my German is getting
not bad. Yeah. So as I said, it's the beginning. Like I said, I'm 30 days in. The beginning, it's like random. It's kind of random. The sentences not always make a lot of sense. Where it's like, okay, you probably wouldn't say that, but they use it. They want to put it in a sentence structure so you can remember it. So they will whatever. They will just combine random things into something that's a sentence, knowing that at that level that you are, that's the best you can do currently. And they're getting, I'm seeing, like, I've looked ahead a little bit and I'm seeing, okay, now they're getting to, okay, now we can do small conversations and phrases and so on. So it just takes, I think you just need to build up some vocabulary before you can go to that point where you can do entire sentences, entire conversations.
Yeah.
Which is my goal. So.
Yeah. Mine is to be able to do it. I mean, so the joy of what I've learned so far, Romanian, when I go, I can now read menus and have some vague idea of what I'm looking at. So that's a really great start. And I can, and speech signs as well, I can kind of go, oh, I know what that word means. That's helpful, you know, and get myself along a little bit. With French, I could speak French a bit before, but it's helping me get fluent again from where I was.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing with French. Yeah.
From school. And then with German, I know nothing and I'm learning. So I'm all the time new words. And it's how I want to have a little, because I do come to Germany, I do come to France and everywhere else. Again, I just want enough to be able to read a menu, talk to someone if I'm struggling. You know, I can say, sprechen Sie kein Deutsch, you know, and be able to at least try and have some.
Yeah, I can say in Portuguese, você fala inglês. So, do you speak English?
Yeah.
For example, stuff like that. I mean, I will be in Portugal every. Yeah, it's really funny. Like, some words are very similar, and you can kind of guess what they would be. I'm gonna be in Portugal every month or two for the foreseeable future. Sense. So it makes sense, and I want to, like, I have a team there, or actually multiple teams. So I kind of, it's good to be able to talk to my people. A little bit, at least.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely.
So, and it's fun. It's a fun challenge. And that's, I think, what Duolingo gets really, really well is to make it fun.
Yes.
To do something useful when you have a feeling, hey, this is, I'm getting somewhere, I'm making progress, and it's useful, and I'm actually remembering what I'm doing.
It's fun. I will cheerfully sit down in the evenings and do 2 5-minute lessons. That's all I usually do most days, 2 5-minute lessons. That's more than enough to kind of get me going. Oh, great. I've learned something. Mm-hmm. And then the penny drops for the next time and I recognize some, or particularly the French ones, I'm recognizing it's drawing stuff back out.
They keep repeating it. And the app is really, I didn't know that. It started now, I think, after I've done a couple lessons, a couple sections. Now it's starting to customize some lessons where it's like, hey, these words you're struggling with. So here is a custom 5-minute session to just practice the things that you're struggling with.
Okay, that's good.
So it's actually smart. It's not a fixed lesson plan you just follow. I mean, there is a plan that is prepared, but they have enough variability in there that they can say, hey, let's repeat this because this seems to be a problem.
All right. Yeah.
And so, if you finally figured out where all the explanations are, because in the lessons themselves, they don't explain a lot. You can tap on the words and it will show you something, but there's actually, like, up top, there is one icon. If you tap on it, it actually explains.
So, yes, that takes a minute to find.
Yeah, but once you have it, and then actually that helped me, where it's like, okay, I was always struggling with O and E at the end in Portuguese. I'm like, okay, when do you use what? And I knew that A and O, like A is usually female and O is male, and I knew that, but I didn't know, like, for words like drinking or whatever, I was like, well, okay, which one were you? Kind of made a mistake a lot of times, and then I found the expression. I'm like, oh, now that makes sense.
You Germans and order of words.
Oh, yeah, forget that, yes.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's random. I can't forget that.
Yeah, there's no rules.
You put words
just
in funny orders. Yeah. You put words in funny orders.
Mm-hmm. You know, after something so useful and productive, I almost feel bad bringing something that's just straight up entertainment.
Yeah, but you need that sometimes too.
That's true. But I don't feel that bad because it's actually really good. It's a 8-episode
Legos, Jeff.
Miniseries. Well, there's a Lego thing that is definitely on my list. I need to check it out before it's a cool thing, but. You know, so foreshadowing. All right, here's my pick on Netflix.
Oh yeah,
Bodies. It's 8 episodes. And that's the complete series, at least for now. And each episode is about an hour long. And here's the premise: you have a murder mystery, and it takes place in the past, the present, and the future. And the victim is the same person. And so you're jumping back and forth through time, essentially, following the murder investigation of this person. And it's not like the person was killed in the 1800s and now you have someone today that's investigating that murder. It's the same person as its own unique murder in these different time periods. And I don't want to say anything else because I don't want to spoil anything, but it's really good.
That looks pretty good.
Yeah. It's based on a comic book series. I guess it was a series where they did multiple issues to tell the whole story. And then later on, it was combined into a single book, sort of like a graphic novel. This is from the story itself, the comic book that it's based on is like at least 10 years old. I think it's been out of print for quite a while. Anyhow, This is really well done, and just go watch it. So,
boy, we have lots of good new things to watch from Ben, Ian, Jeff, and practice my languages. Thanks to Patrice, I'm going to be busy this week.
Yep.
Oh yeah,
it'll be a busy week.
I will definitely be using Duolingo. Fortunately, I have enough of an understanding of how Ukrainian works from its sister language that shall not be named in this world.
No, it's, you know, it's the other way around. It's the daughter language that should not be named.
There we go.
Oh, yeah.
The daughter language that shall not be named. The Voldemort of language.
Yes.
Yes.
Yep.
But I mean, once you get Portuguese down, Patrice, Italian and Spanish should actually be pretty easy.
I think that's helping me currently because I know some Italian, I know French, a couple of words Spanish. I think if I had stayed in Phoenix, I would have learned Spanish because that would have been super helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really interesting. I can a lot of times, some words at least I can recognize. So yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of like similar to German and Dutch. Where they split off from a common ancestor fairly recently.
Yep.
Same with South African and Dutch as well.
Yes, Afrikaans and Dutch is
mm-hmm. equally that's why
I understand some Afrikaans simply because I understand some Dutch and because of that I understand some Afrikaans.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what I understand? I understand I'm hungry and I want to go have some lunch.
Yes.
That's a good idea.
So with that, thank you to all of you for being here and turning this into like the education episode. This has been a lot of fun. Ben, where can people find you?
You can find me hiding from the specter of haunted animatronics. You can also find me on social media at Ben Rathig, your social media of choice, of course. Rathig.tech, where I have a brand new article talking about the upcoming Scary Fast event on Tuesday nights. You can find me on Mac Voices with Mr. Chuck Joyner. Thursday nights on In Touch with Mac. My brain is definitely not working.
I think that's a common theme today.
In Touch with iOS with Mr. David Ginsburg. And of course, Friday and Thursday here on the British Tech Network in the Big Show, in the Mac Show. Now, someone else, please take this.
Ben. I'm so proud of you. You get a trophy for trying. Well done.
Yay, participation trophy.
Yay. Patrice, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me here on this Scatterbrained show every week on Thursday. Also on the Mac show, by the way, on Fridays. You can find out everything I'm doing on my website, thepatrice.com, all the social media links, the podcast, the project, literally everything I'm doing is on there. And if you want to listen to really awesome people talk about their food-related stories and memories and just everything that goes with that, head over to foodieflashback.com for my interview show.
Awesome. You did that so well. Patrice, you get a real trophy.
Oh.
Tom, where can people find you?
People can find me on Mastodon. I am Tom F at sfba.social. And I just want to say go Springboks. For those of you who celebrate, yeah.
Ian, where can people find you?
People can find me as usual here on the Big Show, usually on a Thursday. Otherwise, look for me on LinkedIn, Ian Grant.
All right.
Those are the easiest spots.
Sounds good to me. All right. For me, Jay Gamet on the various social medias, mostly Mastodon and Instagram right now. Then shows. Ben, we'll see if I can get through this any better than you did. I don't think so. All right. On Tuesdays, Chuck Joyner's Mac Voices Live. Then on Thursday, Dave Ginsburg's In Touch with iOS. Then here on the British Tech Network on Thursdays for the Big Show, Fridays for the Mac Show, and Brian Chaffin and I do the Context Machine. Ben, the only reason I was able to get through that better than you was because you were the trailblazer that went through first. You made it easy for me, so thank you for that.
Yeah, and I went through the mind more like a minefield blazer.
Yeah. yes. Yeah. Seriously, your sacrifice will be remembered. All right, so with that, thank you to all of you for just being so awesome and putting a smile on my face and educating me today, and all of you that watch, listen live, participate in the live chat, thank you for being here. You are all awesome, And everyone that watches or listens to the recordings later, thank you for being part of the BTN family as well. Ewan, thank you for being you. Muller, thanks for making sure we have people for the shows. TSO hosts, thank you for making sure that we're actually on the air. We appreciate everything that they do. And if you're not already watching, listening to the Daily News Show, check that out because Kyle is awesome, and throw some money towards it too so that we can make sure that it just keeps going. And let's see, you can join us tomorrow for the Mac Show Keynote Poker, where you can watch in real time as I make a horrible predictions about what's going to happen at Apple's keynote event next week. Then join us next Thursday again for the big show. And everyone, have an awesome weekend.